Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Attention, Blackstone Group shoppers. You've obviously had a good day today. But you've heard, haven't you, that Congress is looking into new ways to tax private equity. So if you don't know how your company's earnings are going to be taxed, how do you know what your company's worth? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices, calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, the 22nd of June. The private equity powerhouse, the Blackstone Group, went public today. Shares promptly jumped more than 13%, raising more than $4 billion for the company. The stock closed up $4.06 to $35.06 a share. And yes, that means billion-dollar paydays for the principals. There's talk another marquee name, Kohlberg Kravis Roberts, may be next. But Congress is exploring new ways to tax private equity. So how can anyone know the company's value? Here's Marketplace's Steve Tripoli.
Sure, Blackstone's hugely successful, and these days all of private equity is hotter than, well, July. But that price. Bob Profusek heads mergers and acquisitions at the big law firm Jones Day. He says Congress telegraphed its intentions toward private equity before investors opened their wallets today.
So buyers are factoring in the likelihood of a change in the tax laws into the transaction. Nonetheless, it's still been received terrifically by Wall Street.
But Harvard Business School private equity expert Josh Lerner says investors still don't know everything. Both the tax and regulatory treatment that firms like Blackstone will face are up in the air.
And it certainly adds a level of risk, one which would certainly give many investors at least some degree of pause.
The folks who may not be pausing are other private equity firms pondering the leap into offering stock, KKR, for example. Boston College accounting professor Gil Manzon says the prospect of policy changes and electoral swings may drive firms like KKR to cash out now.
The politics are very real in tax policy, and if, in fact, the market believes those changes could occur in 2009, that may push through some more transactions.
Harvard's Josh Lerner says not all private equity companies are going to want to go public.
On the one hand, there is the tax and regulatory issues associated with being public, but there's also the fact that private equity works best sometimes behind closed doors.
In other words, it's sometimes easier for private equity to be effective when it's, well, private, which means Blackstone may find it tougher to provide value to its new shareholders now that it's selling them shares. Go figure. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
We really didn't want to talk about this. We haven't up to this point. Had no plans to, so apologies in advance, but the networks made us do it. Paris Hilton's first post-prison interview has sparked something of a bidding war, if today's headlines are to be believed. But those headlines apparently backfired, and now there's no interview. Jill Barshay reports on what's at stake for the network news shows.
NBC News may have offered more than $750,000 to Paris Hilton. New York newspapers say the information came from anonymous sources at ABC News who wanted the interview, too. Both ABC News and NBC News deny they were willing to pay for Paris. Now the poor heiress may be left without any interview deal. Al Tompkins is a former television news director who now runs the broadcast program at the Poynter Institute.
As we move into sort of a celebrity news culture, my guess is that these kinds of agreements, these kinds of things are more common than they once were, and sadly, maybe becoming more common than they once were.
ABC News does admit it pays for video and photograph rights, and that's where things get fuzzy. A Hollywood talent agent told Marketplace he's heard of a news program paying $250,000 for hair and makeup. The talent agent says that celebrities want more money for interviews. TV network executives calculate that top celebrities will drive ratings and ad dollars. Peter Hart is the activism director at FAIR, a media watchdog group. He says the trend is bad for viewers.
Viewers, they want to know that news outlets are interviewing someone because what they have to say is important or newsworthy, not because the news outlet paid them.
The Poynter Institute's Al Tompkins says the trend's not good for the network either. They may hook advertisers in the short term, but risk losing them in the end. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
Fear won out over greed on Wall Street this week. Details when we do the numbers. This week, the House Appropriations Committee approved $153 million worth of legislative earmarks. They include everything from a home of the perfect Christmas tree in North Carolina to funding for the sewage system in South Bend, Indiana. Yesterday, Senator Barack Obama revealed a list of 113 earmarks he's requested, and he challenged fellow presidential candidates to do the same. Commentator Amity Schles says there's a lot of history behind the pork barrel.
Once upon a time, Congress wasn't about earmarks. That time was the 20s. Washington just didn't have the money. In 1929, federal spending was worth less than 3% of GDP. Then came the New Deal. Franklin Roosevelt was an inspiring president. He didn't really like economics. When the great thinker John Maynard Keynes came to call, Roosevelt was disappointed. He told a colleague that all Keynes did was present a rigmarole of figures. Roosevelt didn't know how to stop the Depression, so he turned to giving the voters something. He and Congress started giving farmers cash to idle land or curtail crops. They encouraged farmers to slaughter 6 million pigs early in order to limit the supply of pork and drive up the price. Roosevelt also gave to seniors by granting them pensions through the Social Security Act. Blacks got something, new construction at Howard University. Roosevelt even had something for the press. He provided them with government jobs, care of the Works Progress Administration. That was like handing out salaries to Google employees after a crash. By the end of the campaign of 36, federal spending had tripled to 9% of the economy. Billions were flowing to constituent groups. What about the result? The Depression didn't end. On the contrary, unemployment rose in the later 30s. The Dow didn't come back either. But the political effect we all know. In 1936, Roosevelt took 46 of 48 states, and American groups ever after expected their gifts from government. The New Deal begat the Great Society that begat the Republicans' Medicare Part D. By offering that costly new entitlement to prescription drugs before an election, Bush was pulling a Roosevelt. So remember the rule about earmarks. Help for the economy? Maybe. Help for politicians? Sure. It was true in the 30s, and it's still true today.
Amity Schles' new book is The Forgotten Man, A New History of the Great Depression. We're always interested in your thoughts. Send them to marketplace.org. Just click on contact. On the show yesterday, we talked to sports commentator Diana Nyad about this weekend's 35th anniversary of Title IX. Well, athletes certainly weren't the only beneficiaries of that law. Back in the 1960s, New York City was one of many school districts across the country to create a system of special pregnancy schools, temporary alternative programs for teenagers who got pregnant. Title IX made them legal. But this year, New York City is shutting them down, saying they're not serving their intended purpose. School systems nationwide are coming to the same conclusion. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has more on the story.
Kaieja Davis was in 10th grade and already behind academically when she found out she was pregnant. Her neighborhood high school suggested she transfer to Martha Nielsen High, a pregnancy school in the Bronx. Her son Tristan is now 5 months old. Davis says she loved the so-called P-School's curriculum for new mothers-to-be.
We had parenting classes, and the parenting classes, the teachers drew everything step by step by step. And now they were teaching us how to make quilts and pillows and stuff like that for our babies. Every lunch period, they have something, and it's kind of like a workshop, and they talk about rashes and stuff like that. So every day it's something that they're teaching you that you'll eventually go through with your baby.
She says she also did better there academically than in her old school.
It was challenging, but it wasn't that bad because I had a stronger focus. It's like in regular high school, I wasn't as focused, so it was kind of like, oh, this is boring. But in P schools, it's like it's not many kids in your class, so it's hard for you not to understand what's going on.
Other students I spoke to told a different story about the pregnancy schools. Class period spent watching cartoons because there were no substitute teachers. A whole year without math or English classes because there was no one to teach those subjects. Good students were essentially encouraged to coast or simply couldn't get the academic credits they needed. New York's public schools have about 7,000 students who are pregnant or have children of their own. Only around 300 attend the P schools. The city thinks the P schools have failed to help these students keep up with their peers. Because of privacy issues, the city doesn't track the dropout rates of pregnant students as a group. But attendance levels at the P schools are appalling, roughly half that of the system as a whole. And fewer than half of P school students go back to mainstream schools after their babies are born. Benita Miller is an attorney who directs the Brooklyn Young Mothers Collective, a not-for-profit that offers classes and other support for teen moms. She thinks the P schools have lost their original academic focus. Instead, they've turned into warehouses for pregnant troublemakers.
The very real consequences were that young women who had gaps in their education did not feel inspired or motivated to stay connected to school after they had their children.
Miller's pleased to see the P schools go, but she's worried the alternatives aren't meeting the needs of these young mothers. That's certainly the case for Kaeja Davis. Now 18, she and Tristan are living with her mother. Davis plans to get her high school diploma and wants to go on to college to get a degree in social work. But she doesn't know how she's going to make that happen.
I have no idea. I didn't have enough time to decide what it was I was going to do because I was planning to actually go back to Martha Nelson. Now that Martha Nelson is supposed to be closing, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know anything.
Davis could still make it. I met girls who, despite the odds, did go back to regular high schools and have gone on to college. Today, there are free daycare centers in 40 public schools in New York City, and advocates like the Young Mothers Collective are working to make that childcare more accessible and more convenient for young parents. Ann Cook is principal of the Urban Academy. It's a small alternative public high school which has one of those daycares on site. She says pregnant and parenting teens need the same support any other teenager needs, except the stakes are much higher.
These parents are parents of young children. These children are going to grow up. What they need is an education and an opportunity that will help them perhaps make better choices when they're teenagers.
And she says it's in the city's best interest to provide that. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street, and the Dallas stockbroker is out of town, but Kim Clark of U.S. News and World Report joins us from Columbus, Ohio. How you doing, Kim?
I'm doing great, but the market is not doing that great this week.
No, not at all. Down, today at least, 186 points, 1.37%, and for the week down, what, 2%?
That's right. The total stock market is down about 2%. And it's not just that, because if you look at the bond market, you're seeing a lot of selling, too. I think what we have this week is that the forces of fear are starting to make some inroads.
Uh-oh. How are they doing that?
Well, you look at the sort of tanking of the subprime mortgage markets,
yep.
And that's had some pretty important ripples. Bear Stearns, which had a hedge fund go down pretty much, lost $5, and Merrill Lynch, which was related to that bear fund, also was down $5. And
this is a couple of hedge funds that were heavily invested in the subprime mortgage market.
Right, but their hedge funds actually affected the company's larger stock. I'm talking about Bear Stearns stock. So Bear Stearns is a huge company, and yet investors are pushing down the entire company stock because of this one hedge fund.
Well, certainly not a whole lot of concern, and in fact, a lot of cheering going on with private equity. Still, Blackstone obviously having an extraordinary day today. Rumors that Kohlberg Kravis Roberts will be doing the same. And all this despite the fact that there's this talk in Congress of boosting taxes on these deals.
Right. Even this little element of greed has been affected by the forces of fear. And here, I'll explain why.
Fear versus greed. This, right. That encapsulates Wall Street, doesn't it?
It really does. And one of the reasons that Blackstone went public now actually was because they were afraid that if they waited too long, they would have to pay higher taxes. Right now, the bills that are in Congress would exempt them from a slightly higher tax rate for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I think KKR is now talking about going public is also, again, they want to beat the tax man. But it's not been all great news for private equity. This week, one of the another private equity fund that was going to go public had to abandon those plans because of the Bear Stearns problems.
So we're supposed to see some more of these deals next week. How might this affect all that?
Well, there's a huge deal coming up pretty soon. First Data needs to sell something like $24 billion worth of bonds to fund yet another buyout. And there's some real question about whether they're going to find enough buyers for those bonds.
So are we thinking that fear is going to continue to win out for a while here?
Well, I don't want to end on too much of a down note. I do want to point
out. It is Friday.
It is Friday. You know, the Wilshire 5000, the total stock market, is selling for about 16 times earnings, which is totally within normal ranges. The yield curve, which is the curve that shows sort of bond investors' sentiment, is finally turning up, which means that people don't think that there's going to be a recession coming. And so I think generally things are still fine. It's just that maybe what we're having is a little rational correction.
All right. Excellent way to end the Friday. Thank you, Kim.
You bet.
Kim Clark is a senior business writer at U.S. News and World Report. Coming up, too tired to use the remote? Change the channel with your brain power.
This lets me control stuff with my mind?
Yes.
But first, let's do the numbers. Stocks slumped on Wall Street today as oil prices rose and investors worried about inflation. The Dow fell 185 points, 1.3%, to 13,360. The Nasdaq dropped 28 points, just over 1%, to 2588. The S&P 500 fell 19 points, 1.2%, to 1502. As we mentioned earlier, for the week, the Dow and the S&P each fell nearly 2%. The Nasdaq gave up 1.4%. Retailer Macy's shares jumped 6.5% on rumors the company may be getting outfitted for a takeover. Stock and satellite radio company Sirius beamed up 6%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Ever hear a song on Marketplace, but you just can't place it? Or maybe it's the first time you've heard it and you want to hear it again. Just click on the archive section of our website. We list the songs we play on every show in that day's rundown. There's even a link to an online store where you can buy the song and help fund public radio programming. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up on Monday. The Senate Permanent Investigation Subcommittee holds a hearing on speculation in the natural gas market. The National Association of Realtors releases a report on existing home sales for May. And on this day in 1968, baseball great Bobby Bonds, father of home run king Barry Bonds, made his major league debut by hitting a grand slam in his first at bat. He's one of only three players to ever do that. I'm Stephen Hoffman.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglund in for Kai Rizdahl. It's officially summer, and you know what that means. Wedding season is upon us. And this summer marks an even more frenzied schedule than usual because of a calendar quirk. Apparently, lots of folks are all excited over July 7th, 2007. And its ties to lucky 777. Hotels, casinos, even Walmart are offering tie-ins involving special products, and even group weddings costing $1,777 per couple. Ah, America. But companies in search of the Asian consumer have an even bigger day to look forward to, 8808. Lenora Chu explains.
In the Chinese language, the word eight sounds a lot like prosperity. The number three sounds like the word for life. So joining three eights in a row? A guarantee of lifelong prosperity and wealth.
888 is just
unbelievably popular and auspicious.
Bill Amata is chairman of the marketing firm IW Group. They help corporate clients like McDonald's, Walmart, and MetLife cater to the Asian community. Amata says plenty of Asians will plan weddings, business openings, and special events around that date.
Since it only happens once a century, I think that it's going to be a really big event for a lot of Chinese and Chinese Americans.
Especially when it comes to weddings, which are a huge opportunity to show face in Asian culture.
I think an average American wedding is probably around 50 grand or less, and Asians typically spend upwards of 75,000 to 150,000 for a wedding. So a large number of people are going to benefit from this. So clearly Vera Wang does very well at this time of year.
Las Vegas resorts are already prepping for a huge influx of Asians and Asian Americans. At the Venetian, wedding planners will open their booking window for 8808 more than a year in advance.
They could easily get a 10 to 20% jump in business at this time. So if the restaurants are smart, they'll make sure that they have wedding planners that can plan a minimum of 12-course meal with a lot of fish and a lot of very important other foods.
Many Asians will also be opening new businesses, remodeling their homes, refinancing mortgages, and traveling, Amata says. The Beijing Olympics will open at 8:08 p.m. on August 8th. Banks will launch mortgage packages with lender fees of $1,888. And Amata says a hospital has already asked his firm for help in preparing for more Asian births next year.
So it's not only the resorts, the hotels that cater to weddings, it's going to be food companies, toy companies, baby companies.
In fact, Amata says, nearly every month in 2008 contains a lucky number combination, meaning an entire year rife with promotional opportunities. Except for April, of course. In Asian culture, the number 4 corresponds to death. In Los Angeles, I'm Lenora Chu for Marketplace.
Regardless of the date of the big day, surveys show the average American wedding costs just shy of $30,000. There's the gown, the music, food, drink, of course, the cake. But for brides and grooms looking to save a buck, there is an alternative to the baked-from-scratch 8-tiered confection. Try a rented one. Susan Lobsinger has been baking cakes for 30 years, but now she's also renting them, and she joins us from her home where she's been baking all day. So tell us about what's in those rental cakes.
The cakes are made out of styrofoam, and then we cover them with real fondant icing so that when people look at them, it is real icing, so no one knows that it's a fake cake. What we have as far as fresh cake is on the bottom tier where they actually can cut the cake and take it out and then have their cake sharing for the pictures.
So that's actually the tiered cake that is a fake cake, but you have, what, a little trap door in it that people can, that the bride and groom can actually go in and have a piece?
Yeah, and what it is, it's just a cutout section that we put fresh cake into it. We re-iced it to match the rest of the cake. And down in the bottom plate, we have like a little ribbon with a V to show the bride and groom where to cut because it matches the whole cake so well that no one should know. Our bottom line is if they don't tell anybody, nobody should know.
And then it's just wheeled out of the hotel ballroom or wherever they are, and a sheet cake is in the back, and that's what comes out for the guests.
Right, exactly.
How did you come up with this idea?
My son-in-law and I, you know how you sort of small talk, and we were taking a walk, and I was telling him about brides that they were trying to save money, and a couple of ways that they were doing it was making their cake smaller, and so that this was sort of the alternative is how we came up with it, is just with their problems.
How did your friends and family react when you said that you were going to start renting wedding cakes?
In the very beginning, everyone laughed and thought, you're doing what?
Uh-huh.
And the first year, we got quite a few orders, but this year we've actually doubled our orders. So no one's laughing anymore.
So what is the cost difference then for the bride and groom between a real cake and a fake cake?
$1.75 per serving for the rental and $3.10 per serving for a fondant decorated cake.
That is significant.
Yes. And also, you have no worries with the rental. You've heard disaster stories of cakes falling over or that kind of thing, so that it's a worry-free.
Susan Lobsinger and her partner Wendy Hunter own Rent the Cake of Your Dreams outside Buffalo, New York. Susan, thanks so much for joining us, and not so many thanks for making me hungry.
Most of our business is referrals because of how good our cakes taste.
And would you ship some to L.A., perhaps?
We thought about it, and they are too fragile. We have to teach the U.S. Post Office how to mail first, I think.
All right. Fair enough. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we've got photos of some of those fake cakes on our website. It's marketplace.org. And then there's this today, good news for the very lazy. The advanced researchers at Hitachi Research Laboratory outside of Tokyo have a new technology called optical topography that lets you operate electronics without lifting a finger or a leg or an arm, no strings, no cords or remotes attached. Marketplace's Rico Galliano wanted to find out more about this immediately. Here's what he found.
Hitachi describes the device as a, quote, non-invasive brain-machine interface for the operation of electrically controlled equipment. In other words, you can control stuff with your mind. I asked Hitachi America VP Jerry Corbett to confirm this is as awesome as it sounds. So, dude, this lets me control stuff with my mind?
Yes.
Excellent. The user wears a sci-fi looking device which gauges blood flow in the brain.
When the brain is in an active state, like you're thinking or singing, the blood is flowing quicker. So that is analogous to an on signal. When the brain is calm, that could be analogous to off signal.
The cost of devices with this technology? Tens of thousands of dollars. Cool, you're thinking, but I have this $20 remote that does the same thing. Well, businesses have more important applications in mind. Michael Canellis is with CNET.com.
Optical technology has been drawing a lot of interest in the medical field. Hitachi is using it to study blood flow in the brain. And another company, Triage Wireless, has optical patches that monitor the diameter of your arteries.
In Japan, Hitachi's already marketed devices to victims of the degenerative muscular disease ALS. It lets them communicate yes or no. Of course, as I told Hitachi's Jerry Corbett, it's easy to see how this totally sweet invention could turn sour. Okay, when I was little, I loved Battlestar Galactica. My parents liked Masterpiece Theater. They were on at the same time. If we both had this device and we were able to change the channel with our minds, I mean, can you imagine the consequences? It could have ripped my family apart.
But it would certainly have made for a more dynamic family environment.
I guess that's what they have TiVo for.
That's right.
In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a diversified mix of international investments can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, new ethics rules are throwing a curveball at the annual congressional baseball game. Strike one, lawmakers can't solicit corporations to give money to the charity game. Strike two, the post-game hot dog party, funded by the Grocery Manufacturers Association, got caught in a rundown. And the final pitch, Congress fouls it off to stay alive. After much debate, the call comes in that Major League Baseball can still donate the baseballs, because otherwise they're just too expensive. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 185 points, or 1.3%. The Nasdaq dropped 28 points, just over 1%. The S&P 500 trickled down 19 points, or 1.2%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yor. Next time, Running Rite Aid, our next installment of Conversations from the Corner Office. I'm Tess Vigeland. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.